Ion doesn't talk unless it's being recorded.
Well, that's not so true.
Well, it applied the other night after Mum. I didn't know whether he stayed on with you guys, but I asked JW the next day because he downloads it, and he says, no, Ion left the same time you did. And then JW said, that's because it wasn't going to be recorded. So JW, that's why Ion left, one of the factors.
But I'm just recalling
there are moments. There are a few times where
when Ion, you know, spoke for hours unrecorded.
Yeah, that happened a couple
early
times
morning
on tailgates. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but generally,
yeah.
Maybe he didn't think
but
anything he was saying was valuable. But he does want to be recorded every moment, and he will say that. But back to what is it you're saying, Brian? Or what?
Yeah,
were you
now,
yeah,
the
you don't
thing
like
was,
the idea that he's physical?
Your whole dialogue in the first hour of changing vibration and frequency to tactility.
Right. But you just said, are we going back to that again about non-physical become physical? Are you relating that to the tactility topic?
No, I was relating that to what we were talking about after the MUM thing, Monday.
What is physical?
The four bodies and the chemical body specifically. See, most people relate to physical as their physical meat sack body.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we talked about was, well, the physical is also TV body, the chip body.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we threw in.
You didn't hear it, but Ion reinforced that today by saying everything is nature. Chip body, that our nature. And non-physical, he said, comes from nature. He said that today. So, back to what were you saying?
You guys must have, I take it you guys got into that on the melting titanium, because when you come on, that was your theme early. When you went to nature, you went to earth, wind, water, fire.
No. That was not. That was my own issues about my chart and about tactility. It was a new insight. We had a very good melting titanium last night and a lot of completion of things. So that influenced what I said, even though I wanted to talk about tactility earlier this week before the melting titanium happened. But I thought it was appropriate that we got to an interesting point last night with Ion, me and Carolyn, and that it's the anniversary of the beginnings of the chip body last year with the forum. And that's also a year from the laughing night with Steve, which is on the Dukes. That was one of the first. That April 22nd, 2009 was, in my mind, one of the first times I heard Ion doing rants. And he thought Steve had a good sense of humor, so that might have evoked it, the Steve's presence here. Steve is a stick in the mud. But Brian, so there were other reasons why we did the Earth stuff, and I wanted to make it a perfect, I think this was a really good show. The whole thing was, it's worth studying that, what we did.
Oh, today. Yeah, well, the first hour, I enjoyed the first hour. There was a lot in the first hour. That's all I heard was about 35 minutes of the first hour, and I thought it was pretty good. There was a lot of good information in there.
Yeah, and the Lady Gagas were really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they laid out really good, slowly. You can think, meditate on it, the dilemmas of how you respond to what Ion says. And then Sheila has that whole thing about rock, which was a great story.
Yeah,
you heard that, right?
Funny, actually. Yeah, that was funny.
I didn't, but...
Oh, it's a great story when you hear the archive.
I'll catch it on the archive.
And I would assume for any of those who have participated on the forum in private messages either between one another or with Ion, that if you were to go back and review things, one would probably find that anomaly thing occurring. as a
into one's own personal messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that happened amazingly last night is Ian did his first solo show, which is pretty incredible what he did.
Yeah, I caught that. I would assume it was recorded. You made reference to it.
Yeah, it'll be put on Dupes as soon as Steve embeds it. I have to send it to Steve.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Steve Reimer in Toronto, not Steve in Nova Scotia. Steve in Nova Scotia is the laughing Steve. But we joined in at 6, and it turned out Ion had already been on for almost 2 hours. I went to the beach at 4, my time, and I noticed when I got the copy later that around then JW had left a message when we weren't here, so he went on and did a show while we went to the beach. And we got back 2 hours later, and the show is 2 hours and 20 minutes. There's your 22, his first show. And it's pretty amazing what he offered, what he knew to offer, and then his punchline, what he says at the end. So that's well worth waiting for. I don't know if he's going to do more and if the name will change each show. Moi was this week.
So there you go, Joyce. They gave you your segue.
Oh, okay. So, Bob, I'm going to take a little poke at you.
Okay.
Okay. So, given
sure.
that there's no time, what's this about celebrating all these anniversaries and keeping track of anniversaries? There's
That's
no
celebrating
time.
The fact that time tells. We make time tell. And the timing indicated the rhythm indicated by these anniversaries is what we're referring to. See, we get into it later in the show. Someone asked, why all these 3 hours of words? Why words? Well, we're playing with it. You play. This is Ion playing with physical. Why he engages mortar. That's what you get when you're ascended. You can play. You play with time. Or the effect of the printing press. There were services of the printing press, the extension of the eye. It's just it's too gargantuan now. Its effect was too so it had to be balanced by having tactility extended and go around it. So it's all here to play with, Joyce. As long as you know what you're playing.
Okay. It's just sometimes you sound so serious about it.
Well, that's part of the playing. Part of the playing is creating the effect of an apparent contradiction that makes you confront that, that makes your mind respond and think about it, and then you've been suckered into using your mind. So you actually have to be seduced by everything and notice you're being seduced and then not be seduced the next time. Then come back and seduce everybody else with it, the same material.
Well, then that takes thinking, and, you know, one of the suggestions is to not get involved or overwhelmed with your thinking.
Once you're good at that,
get out of your mind.
And I'm really good. I often marvel how little thinking I've completed, or how I'm not a very good thinker, or I don't finish it, but I'm very good at playing with spurts of it. I'm not stuck in thinking.
And when you used to do it, you were called an expert?
I was called an expert. So, but that would be it. An expert is someone who really values his thinking because he gets paid for it. And that's where he gets seduced.
Or somebody who used to spurt.
Yeah. 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 The spurting. You're talking about the sexual pun there?
Well, no. Whatever way
you
want to take it.
Just another conversation.
Yeah.
It's the duality of conversations we're playing.
The tactility is you create tension with the words you're using as you engage with someone, but you don't identify with the tension, you don't take it personally, and you play with it, and the more another person can roll with it, you end up acting like blacks in Harlem. That was
a joke.
Yeah, there
you go. Interesting.
Yeah. The way the blacks are pretty good at jiving each other, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You see that in Califia's voice. I assume she's black. She sounds black. Anybody met her?
She's black.
Yeah. She loves to jive. You listen to her calls, like last week, you know, she gets all intense and she says, "Wait, I'm going to whoop your ass, Bob," you know. They get into, you could say on the surface, mean language, but they don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's not putting it out there personally.
Right.
To just, you know, jive it.
That's right. She's just playing with language and playing with human emotion, pretending she's human, so to speak.
Well, and back to what was just stated about the, you know, seriousness aspect of tactile engaging. What came into my mind is, like, if you're going to play, and it's all play, so if you're going to learn how to play a new game, you have to think about the rules, if you will.
You pay attention.
And
you
how
put tension.
You
put tension
right.
into it. Attention. It's create attention, a seriousness for a moment to register
for a moment to figure out, okay, how does this go now? And I want to do this. I want to play, but I've got to, you know what the rules are and so on. And so then once you get that down, then you go into the playing of it. You don't think about the rules because you know the rules, and now you're playing, and now it's fun.
Yeah,
same like learning how to play a game.
And then
I thought this game there was no rules.
That's the rule, though. That's the rule to play within a no rule situation.
Right.
So you got to. How are you going to create tension? Like I marvel each week how Ion's going to create a show. What's he going to talk about when we said so much, and he manages to create a new play, a new tension as the show unfolds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There you go, Brian. That's your opening.
What? I missed it. What happened?
Bad timing, Brian.
Yeah.
But the tactility is tension and no tension, the interplay. And that is not something you can just follow the bouncing ball. You have to feel it. Use your other senses to be good at it.
And do, like you had, do the waxing and waning between the tense and no tense, that resonant interval of what tactility is.
That's
is that how, okay.
And tense is, the first word in the Gagas, it got blipped out because whatever the overlay. You hear Allison going, tensing, because they've been talking about tenses and time. And she goes, tensing, and then Sheila says something. So you miss the tensing. But tenses, past, present, future, are tensions within a tactile relationship with the void. So tensing, pay attention. It's interesting that the word tension has that, that the tense, past, present, future tenses imply angles of tension, where you think, okay, that's
attention
over there.
Attention and intention as well can be.
They're all tensions. Tensions and tenses.
Interesting you bring up the void, because the universe, we hit on that, abhors a vacuum, so there is no void, really. Remember that came up late after Mom?
Yes, because Scott Taylor is an expert on talking on the void. Scott Norris, as a kind of biased Buddhist, likes to bring it back to the void. He likes Scott Taylor because Scott Taylor talks about the Buddhist void, but the way Scott Taylor talks about it, he sees the void in the black hole and in virtual reality. So the Buddhists are not adequate to the virtual reality void. That's what we've been thinking about on Mom so far. And, yeah, we did bring it up, but Scott wasn't there to go into it with us.
So what would be the void?
This is Angela's issue. Angela's issue is the void. She was not happy with her private readings and discussing the void with Ion. Ion, she said, didn't get what the void was. Then one day I Skyped with them a couple months ago, Angela and Chad, and we got into the void, and I brought in tactility and all that stuff, and she says, that's what I mean. And so she was happy with she was happy with how I understood the void. She said, that's how I do it. That's how I understand it. And she didn't think Ion got it. And wait a minute, Brian. And I told her, Brian, that Ion does get it, but you're not getting how Ion uses it. So it left at that. She prefers to listen to my old radio shows than to Ion, because the words I'm using, she likes. That's what references the void. She doesn't get how Ion is saying the same thing.
So she resonates with your language?
My language on it, yeah.
So what is your explanation of the void in your terms, Bob?
Well, tactility is the interplay of the senses. It's a part of the brain or something that organizes the senses, but it's not a sense in itself. So it's a no thing. So right? So tactility is about the no thing. And now McLuhan pointed out that the Zen Buddhist idea of the interval, or quote, the void, is exactly what he means by tactility. What the Zen Buddhists didn't know is that television was an extension of tactility, or the void. Now that's the new profound thing. When you extend the tactile interval, which is the void, now the philosophers of the void, they conceptualize it and get into visual images, and that's not what we're talking about. That's why Alan Watts, who was a professor of religion, when he discovered Zen, it relieved him of the concepts of voidness, and he got the rhythm of it through his Zen Buddhist exposure. But he didn't know. See, this is the genius of McLuhan. Nobody figured out that television isn't. Electricity is a tactile medium. It's an extension of the void. That's pretty profound.
The know-nothing interplay between the senses, as is that what you...
Yeah, like the mind. We did a good thing with Ion last night about defining electricity and the conduit and these different parts of the toaster and the toast, which is the last image on this week's Fringe. And Ion, JW, told me, when you see the... he said he was floored when they took the toaster point that Ion always makes and had it in the show. So all during the show, I'm waiting for it to be said, something about toaster. But then at the very end, it just shows Olivia saying she's going to die as she eats a toast, and the camera zeroes in on the toaster. That, to JW, was as much as verbalizing it. And you could argue with that, but that's... So I did not get to hear anything referenced to the toaster other than the gestural action of Olivia ending the show, making the toast, buttering it or something, eating it, and then making this profound statement about her life that she was going to get killed and how she accepts it. And then, and I didn't notice this, but J-Dub says, what happened? They panned into the toaster. When I re-look at it, I'll see if that's true. So why am I saying that? There's something about the void. Oh, yeah. The void, what is thought? It's really hard to pin down with Ion when you know all these different factors, the difference between electricity and the tubing around the wire, all these factors. What is thought? It's very hard to say what it is in the middle of that. So you have to think of the mind as organizing things. The mind.
Are you wondering what it is or how it's created?
Both. You know, because Ion, he will not. He almost doesn't want to tell
question.
You what thought is, because he says it's not good for you, or it's a waste of time.
That's what I was going to say. I said, why bother defining it? If we define it, then we're going to redefine it nebulously, so that we can't get a hold of it.
Right.
So, just kind of move on. Not even.
Well, no, I play
like
with
saying,
it.
Right,
I'll know
it
what you don't move on,
really a
Tina.
Relevant thing to consider.
You don't move on. You play with thinking about it, but you don't get stuck in that. You don't get lost or think that's the be-all or end-all. You heard Carolyn today say, Bob, Carolyn got me pregnant. What was it? Barefoot and pregnant and stuffed with thought.
Right.
That was a good statement.
Yeah, that was. because I've heard, you know, we've chatted about this. You can have, think whatever you want, think all day. I mean, you can't stop not thinking.
Right. It's fine to think.
But like you're saying, don't get caught up in what it is that you're thinking. Just think it and think whatever.
Yeah, and you'll see that in tribal people. The book really froze getting involved in thought. You see,
yeah.
The writing, when you freeze thought with writing, and then the phonetic alphabet did an extra specialization of it, and then the printing press spread the phonetic alphabet around the world, that was the mind fuck about thought that printing press caused.
And so what comes to my thinking is a term that we used to use. People would get into analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Or the paralysis of analysis. And that's something that, you know, you get all tied up in your shorts.
Overanalyzing.
And you can't move forward.
Right. And so you end up like Kant or any of the 19th century philosophers writing great tomes, these paralysis dilemmas. Nowadays, once you had 20th century, you could stop writing and go watch a movie or turn on the radio and engage in another sensory medium, and that released, that created what McLuhan called sprung rhythm. It released you from the hypnosis of the printing press. And the whole 20th century for thinking people has been adjusting to the fact that you didn't need to live in a frozen thought world anymore. Because the whole literate intelligentsia was based on the value of that.
Yeah, very cool. Never.
Well,
what's interesting is
that
seeing that.
Did you say seeing it?
Seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, to see
like
that is a delight to the mind.
Doing the observer position of seeing it.
That's a delight to the mind. And that's the pleasures of the mind to actually get something. Garrett Dean used to tell me that, he said it once, he said, you can understand the incomprehensible. That's what we're saying here. You can enjoy how the mind grabs a pattern and makes it symmetrical, and then you get an epiphany or a sense of beauty from it. But then don't hold on to it. It's a pleasure. It's a kind of a pleasure.
Which
right?
brings us right back to playing.
Yeah.
Playing the you know.
Yeah,
once
it's
you
interesting.
Can see it and see the pleasure in it, in the thinking and the bantering back and forth, not taking it so serious and just playing, not being personal in it. Then it
yeah,
comes
that's
back
how,
to play.
Yeah, that's how ION completes a lot of people's thinking and moves them out of thinking with the vibration, the gong effect of ION. Then that's when you become ascended. You can play with time and thought and mind. And that's what ION demonstrates every time he shows up. The playing with the limited.
What are you referring to as limited? Thought?
Mind, thought, and
mind.
And staying, getting stuck.
Static.
It's amazing during your day, you know, some of the gurus say, watch how you lose track of your thinking or get lost in your thought or mind chatter. It's really hard not to get lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the part, the enjoyment of the day. So people have images that are icons, fear, death, these major belief images that lurk around their playing with thought, and until they get rid of those images, that's why they think with intensity or worry, because they're framed by the fear icons of thought. The icons
or
that
the,
emotional...
Or the thinking that they're doing is based in a fear setup within them.
You say based... It's framed by big thoughts that the parents or society gave them that they didn't
Correct.
Get over.
Correct. So they get caught up in their fear of what they're thinking.
Yeah. They think their thinking will solve that dilemma, that fear thing. So we get this in Mentor or that Anthony Hall. They take certain words, like physical bodies, we're going to have physical bodies, that whole point I read in the last hour, those are words that mean something to him. They're icons. He builds his self around them. None of those words mean anything to me. I know what they can refer to. I pay attention to what they mean to other people. What's the image you have of that? And then figure out how to play with that. But you can see that he values certain words. He's got word allergies.
Who does?
Anthony Hall, when I was reading his, he has this long stuff I'm reading lately, you know, on the show. He gives a statement by Ion or me and then says, incorrect! And then explains his correction. And the point, you can only correct if you have certain words that you have not disappeared, have not evaporated.
And that correcting, that Anthony judging himself in the correcting of words that he's hearing is him not, is him doing what?
He is not framed by certain images, which are thoughts and emotions. He's framed by them. He has not knocked those walls down.
Mm-hmm.
Mental walls, mental siding.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's why you have to think every thought and then realize it's inadequate, and you'll bump up to major thoughts or emotions that you'll have to wrestle with, but eventually they have to melt away, and you're so-called not afraid. You don't have that fear anymore.
Is this fear then for most, like, these unknown factor, fear of the unknown?
Yes, the unknown.
In someone's mind, they have this image of the unknown, and it's a,
They have an image of some place they're going to or are running from, which is some implanted fear environment or pain environment.
Called
you make it concrete,
that they, that they call unknown. Because
the unknown sideswipe. If I don't think everything, then some thought that I hadn't thought of and haven't categorized will sideswipe me and flip me into the painful abyss, some pain factor. Because it is pretty hard. I don't know if ascended babies can get this, but most people do not want to have pain. There's a whole, Jeremy Bentham, I think he built his philosophy on all human behavior is an oscillation between pleasure and pain. And to a degree, that's true. But with Ion, you learn that you can go past that dynamic, so you wouldn't want to limit yourself to that philosophy. But for little men, that is the way they operate, avoid pain, which is what Ion says, follow the path to, I'm changing it, joy to comfort. Follow your fastest path to comfort.
And yet,
that's trying to get pleasure.
Right. So,
but Ayn's questions, you can't run from pain to get your pleasure.
You would experience a pain or discomfort in order to, so that you would know what the comfort would feel like as far as a reference.
That's what Ion says. Contrast and pain is part of reality, and that's true, but you have to see through the process. You have to see through and not be controlled by it, and then you enjoy the contrast that happens. But the more you see through it, the less contrast you get. And then you might create contrast just for the heck of it, for the fun of it, because you're playing with it.
And then that contrast then at that conjuncture would show up as determining a preference to this or that.
Yeah.
Versus a bigger of continually flipping from comfort to discomfort.
Yeah,
into
right.
Into preference.
Yeah, take someone right now doesn't have a job. They really think they got to get a job and get some money. And it'd be pretty hard to stop a human from taking that seriously. But what is it that's going on there? What's the fear? Why can't they relax and let money flow through them? Most people cannot do – that's not practical. They think the images of it, that's not practical, right? And it's hard to tell whether the running around with money and trying to have it could be the contrast that's given here. I used to say that money was a secular god. It holds people together. We don't know how much we can give up that pressure.
Is that the tension?
Yeah, that money creates tension. So it's a legitimate complaint that ION does not deal with that tension. But some people seem to get something out of ION when he gets them to really absorb the idea that you don't need to worry about money. Once they get that, some are not afraid of it, then they actually do start to get money. But most people can't make that leap.
Is that because of the images that have been...
Yeah. It is true. You've got to have money or you starve. And most people aren't equipped to go in the wilderness. The wilderness is owned by the government, and the rangers will chase you off there. You know, so you are stuck in the industrial context. You got to have money to eat. So you get on welfare, but now they're worrying about the debt. And the Republicans are trying to cut back the welfare society. You know, they've been doing that since Reagan. Now, Ion would agree with that. But a lot of humans say, no, we need to give people some kind of support.
Safety net thing or something.
Yeah. You see, how much risk do you want to have the population experience? Will they go anarchistic? Ion says, because the world is so much anarchy now, it supports Ion's point. Nobody's following the rules anyways, so have no rules and then see who survives. Free-for-all. And the traditional way of engaging a free-for-all, which is to be a sly, clever manipulator or grabber acquiring things, may not be the only way to do it. I am suggesting an alternative way of doing it. Ion sees no problem in the homeless people. He says they're actually really, really pretty tuned in the way people think they want to become when they hear Ion. They don't have many rules in their life, no obligations.
And the image I have of a truly homeless person, say, on the street, pushing a shopping cart or carrying...
And swollen ankles
whatever.
And scars and bleeding, you know, it doesn't look good.
But that their concern for the day is if they need to get warm, where to go for that, and
get a sandwich.
Have some food to eat.
Yeah. So being homeless should not be a fearful image, but you could do homelessness better if you knew about RNA drops.
Yeah. But then that brings back the concept of money.
Yeah. The image, the icon, the emotion, you might even call it a reaction formation. That's a psychoanalytical term. The reaction, every environment is a reaction formation and becomes a cliche and is repeated. And McLuhan wanted people to see through their environments and not get stuck in them, which would involve fearfulness. Or paralysis.
And like what Joyce was saying, the overanalyzing
paralysis. Which is what?
Thinking.
Yeah, that's what James Joyce foresaw with Finnegan's Wake. The prison society would make with the information society, with electric media, radio, television, and movies. It would create a prisoning of thought. And didn't Ion say last week on cash flow, talking about something, wanted to get you to think, maybe James Gleick, whereas Finnegan's Wake wanted to get you not to think. That was an anti-environment, a counter-perception to the increasingly paralyzed in thinking information that was going to come with CNN and everything. He showed the picture of that, and the genius you got to take to figure out why he did that and why he would write an unreadable book. What's the ratio of tension it's in relation to? It's in relation to an information overload of society.
And Finnegan Wake demonstrates. Not ever getting there.
Yeah, yeah, and offers a solution. When I talked to Joyce through the Evergreens, he said he made a point that every possible theme or idea that a critic could find in it, or a fan, he made sure it was erased. He wanted to make it a void. A voided book. And that's silly if it's a figure without a context, but if you put it in relation to what's happened to society with the information overload, then he did the right movement. He did the right artistic gesture with the book medium. And that's after doing, you know, what's considered the greatest novel. He did that, and then he could see through a lot and saw, well, I did a great novel, but that's going to lead to a lot of professors analyzing an information overload of Joyce studies, and that's a metaphor for what's coming. So that's... At least that's a good way to look at it if you want to make any significance out of Finnegan's Wake. There are many Joyce scholars who give up after 30, 40 years. Professors, they don't teach the Wake. They say the book doesn't mean anything. It's a waste of time. And they don't know the McLuhan angle. McLuhan figured out how to make Finnegan's Wake rational and have a purpose. And he had to do that as a professor of English because that was the pinnacle of English, or at least Joyce was. So you got to say, how do we show that Joyce did not go nuts with Finnegan's Wake?
And what's the purpose of Finnegan's Wake?
Finnegan's Wake is the purpose to show the wakefulness that the electric environment will bring us to. The service environment of electric overload. It anticipates ion. And you will see this in the first MOI, M-O-I. You will see ion acknowledging that.
So I'm actually engaging in Finnegan's Wake without even reading it.
Yes, in the environment today, yeah.
Just as I'm engaging in McLuhan, correct?
No, you got to read McLuhan. See, the Joyce showed the electric environment. McLuhan explained
that
the causes.
I just got to listen to Bob.
No. You got to read it. Yeah, no, you're relying too much on one version of Bob, one medium. You got to read Bob or read McLuhan. You got to translate your understanding into other media modalities. That's comprehensive awareness. And McLuhan did say, here's this guy who showed the disservices of the books and all that, but he said, I still remain a professor of literature who wants you to learn how to see books, how to read.
How to
but
read.
But read,
how
read
to
knowing
read.
The effects of the process as you do it.
So is it like reading between the lines?
Yeah, reading
kind
books.
Of?
Reading books is exactly like it playing with time. When you're ascended, you know how to enjoy books. Just like you know how to enjoy what time tells.
Like them anyway.
What'd you say?
Wow.
Did you get that,
Brian?
Always have.
Joyce,
get
you what? Got that?
What was I supposed to get?
Reading?
A lot. You were supposed to get a lot, Brian.
How?
By paying attention.
An ascending human being would become, able to use a book and not be paralyzed by the effect of the printed book,
yeah.
but be able to enjoy it. Is that?
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but that's what you mean.
Yeah. And part of it is appreciating collectively how electricity collectively made everybody unparalyzed from the book.
Is that what I was supposed to get?
Yep.
Oh, I don't know where y'all been, but that's old school. That's Joyce.
Well, that's a Joycean answer to say that's old school. He would agree with you. Like Akito sent this YouTube heaven, and it's done by Eraserhead, or from Eraserhead. I didn't look at it yet. But Eraserhead is a great example of the ascended mind, always erasing. And Master Eichhart, the 13th century mystic, said, only the hand that erases writes the true thing.
Boy, isn't that nebulous.
Yeah.
I like it, though.
Yeah. You're learning to relax and allow your nebulosity quotient, Brian.
Oh, yeah. See? You don't get yourself tied down. You don't get yourself tangled up. And you
and
make shit up, and it comes true anyway. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Now, that is, when you first do it, you're really fanatic about it, and you're really making an exertion and effort towards it. After a while, you do it a few times or understand it, then you can relax. Then you can actually do what you were not trying. You can actually get clear and precise as a play. But you're into practicing nebulosity and enjoying it, which is the first enthusiasm for it. That's good, or that's useful. Now, A.S.
Right.
Scott brings his biases and stays with his bias, but Scott's bias is to be flexible and even to read. A.S. Scott actually demonstrates quadriphenia, but he's not fully allowing himself to see through it completely.
I agree with that.
What?
I agree with
that. Scott, you
saying he was
said
good
I agree
with that.
With it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know sometimes I get blindsided.
Scott, your connection went south, brother.
We're not hearing the form and not the content. That's actually the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's mouthing the answer electrically. See, now this static we're getting, when Joyce wrote Phineas Wake, he put the sounds of static in the middle of the sentence to show you that there was more than the book going on. He was including all media. So when he wrote static, you try to read it and find words, and you didn't know it was static unless you understood and got the insight from McLuhan.
Makes me think of how they do a lot of these Hollywood movies, and there's always these messages or images or anything, and it's always embedded in what they call white noise.
Yeah.
See, most people look at it on the surface, they say it's crap, it's just white noise, static, you know, nothing. But then they start analyzing, it's like, no, there's all kinds of stuff embedded in what you're calling noise.
Yeah, now there's a history to that. In the 50s, they called it sort of subliminal projection or subliminal seduction.
Subliminal messaging. Mm-hmm.
Right, so it became a political issue and hearings were held in Congress. Now, McLuhan wrote about it, and he, of course, came on another level at it. And then a guy named Wilson Bryan Key became a student of McLuhan's. And in the early 70s, he wrote a book called Subliminal Seduction, which is quite famous. It shows images of sex and death embedded in advertising. and he was a university a professor in Ontario. He got McLuhan to write the foreword, and McLuhan spells out really what's going on more than what Wilson Brian Key says in his book, but you got to understand McLuhan to get that. But Wilson Brian Key went on to become quite famous, controversial, and he was the professor who testified for the right-wingers, Bible people, against those bands that embedded stuff in the 80s, or accused of it. Like Uriah Heep or one of those kind of bands got in trouble. So he got used by the right wing. Now, McLuhan writes him a letter after the book is famous in 73, 74, says, "You have embarrassed me." And he was upset that nobody got what his foreword was about, and it looked like that McLuhan believed there was subliminal seduction. So understanding subliminal projection is a key way of understanding what Brian just brought up. They stick images in the white noise, but McLuhan said Madison Avenue, and that would include the CIA, couldn't condition a mouse. You have to understand why that subliminal imaging does not work. And as a literate person, you would not believe that. You would think it works. That's where MK Ultra, Walter Borwick, got lost in the programming that the CIA was trying to do with LSD. And that's the literate person believes that's an issue. Anyways, that's the core. I've done a lot of that in my radio shows, explained that, debunked it. Like, I debunked the whole George Nouri harp guys. I did that from a McLuhan angle for years because my show was the first coast-to-coast kind of show. But I did it as playfulness. I didn't believe or be locked in the different schools of thought that I presented. But it was all conspiracy stuff. And but understanding Finnegan's Wake helps you, in perceiving what it is, helps you understand the fallacy of what FEMA camp cramp and these guys get lost in.
Because they believe it as something going on?
Yes, the literate person thinks that you take what you say and think matches with the external world, touches visually, and also touches someone else. And so they think there are connections. All the things that Ion undermines by saying there are no connections between you and another person, there's no way you can affect another person, that is counter to the literate values. Because the matching effect of the book made people think that they all had to be on the same page and could be on the same page. So that you need
and
to read.
And even if you were to find yourself to be on this, you know, same page as someone else at some point, doesn't necessarily, as long as you don't stay there, you're good. It's just like a moment thing. Okay, you know, we
right.
kind
it's
of
only a moment thing
and
now
resonated
Tina,
there.
Tina, but hold it. To stay on the same page, it got frozen in the printing press era. That led to information paralysis because there was no environmental medium to release you from that.
Until the electric age came around.
Yeah, then allowed someone to live and say, well, you just said, I only have to do it for a moment. I mean, you got these people worrying about mind control coming through television, and they don't know that McLuhan said that an environment of television is the highest decibels of human consciousness. Now, what does that mean? Because most people think TV is lousy, stupid content. How could an English professor say such a stupid thing? Well, the job was to figure out why he said that. And he has a lot of stuff that he shows you that proves that he was right.
But
okay,
McLuhan wasn't focused on the content of this, what was coming on the TV. He spoke about the effects of the electricity through the TV.
He talked about the medium, not the content. That's the simple way to say it.
Whereas most people in the frozen
literate
by
societies,
the
book yeah,
are
because the book is the only medium
concerned about
with
the content because that they were always they'd grown up being concerned about what it was they were reading.
Say this: the book is the only medium that has content. You have a frame, and then you read letters inside the frame.
Sure.
Speech doesn't have a frame around it.
How would you apply that to an artist painting within a frame or on a canvas or whatever paper they're using or that
Painting became a major significant medium once the printing press came in. Before that, there was no value put on particular arts. If at best it was sculptural, which was a tactile medium, the sculpture arts were the dominant arts, not the painter.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And look at the look at the Gothic, the museums were the Gothic cathedrals. That was stained glass light through imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Not light reflecting off a flat page.
Oh, something I wanted to ask you. Who was the artist that you were speaking about in payroll today, as well as Bouguereau?
Bouguereau is, you know, some classical painter that Sheila talked about last week when we did whatever the art question was. Bouguereau. He's a famous old painter, you know, way back there.
And so why was the content of what he was painting? Well, it was reference to a particular painting in today's show.
Yeah, the Venus
heaven.
And the flower or lotus or something, the Venus painting, whatever, that he did. There's all kinds of artists that did Venus.
Venus as a goddess?
Yeah,
Venus?
The goddess. Yeah, the goddess.
Okay.
I think it's Botticelli's image that I'm more familiar with. She's in a flower.
Okay.
But the take the painting of the medieval period, always the same content, Christianity. Then take all the art of the last 150 years, the incredible variety of imagery that was painted. Because the content of the painting became ideas or passing notions that you got from literate society. Pre-literate society had the same content, and it was almost not even to be noticed. It was to be as a frame for a ritualized behavior, like the mass. See, that's the revolution in art. McLuhan has a whole book on it. It's a beautiful book called Through the Vanishing Point. He shows ancient Eskimo art, then and caveman art. Then he shows ancient Chinese art and Egyptian art. Then he gets into Greek art at the time of the phonetic alphabet and how that changes. Then the Roman art with the Rhodes and the printing and the papyrus and around the time of Jesus or the third Jesus. And then he gets into medieval art. And then he shows Renaissance art. And then you have the incredible variety of paintings and subject themes that come in once the printing press is there. The best way to look at history is to go through the senses, which are empirical, and the extensions of them. That bypasses ideological arguments or conceptual arguments. So he actually created an Esperanto for academic work instead of being stuck in any faction. He gave a way for people to look at the history of culture without having to have an ideological bias. Now, the Marxists hated that because their bias was the revolution was way more important than any ideas, and we got to take over the rings of power, which they didn't know were obsolesced by the digital environment. So, you want to say something, ASA?
Well, from what my understanding is in psychology, and what is that the subconscious mind records everything, and it does not know the difference in that subconscious between reality and memorex, so to speak. In fact, that's a good word to use, but it records it. 80% of our decision-making is made up from our subconscious. Is that a truth?
Okay. If you didn't know McLuhan, you might think that was profound. But McLuhan wrote back in the 50s that the subconscious, as we understood it, was an artifact created by literacy, because pre-literate people lived in the dream and fully conscious using all their senses. They did not get specialized in the visual sense. When the printing press specializes and exaggerates the visual sense, it creates a lack of attention to the other senses, which creates a backlog, and that's really what the subconscious is, the not translating visual data into the other senses. Then he says sociology and psychology are the last genres of literacy itself. The very studies, sociology and psychology, are the last things the book can write about. And it's really writing about its own effect, which is the bird's eye view of what's going on in society, that's a visual perspective, and what goes on in the individual psyche or subconscious.
So those are the ideas
or words I just said that you should look at to counter what you just said.
Okay.
Or at least consider it.
Well, you're giving me reason to look.
Yeah. That's all I'm trying to do.
What are some of the top schools that McLuhan was recognized by?
No schools.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, maybe Hollywood. You know who was a great friend and supporter of McLuhan was Norman Lear. It's the advertising and the modern media of the 50s and 60s who celebrated McLuhan. And, of course, the academics hated it for them because they thought he betrayed the cloistered, you know, book world of the ivory tower of university by going on TV and saying interesting things and then being used in Woody Allen's movie and all this stuff. He was lionized by the ground, which was the newer media. They knew because the book guys weren't working in television movies. They didn't know the issues or the problems. But Norman Lear knew the issues of producing a show every week and what he had to consider, and he saw McLuhan spoke to that. No one else did.
And was that person successful in their endeavors?
Oh, yeah. Norman Lear is the King TV guy. He did Archie Bunker, all that mod. He did all that change in TV in the early 70s. You know about him, Joyce and Tina, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Norman Lear is probably the most successful TV guy until you get into the Android meme phase.
Okay. I've just never paid that much attention to TV.
Yeah, did you watch Archie Bunker?
A couple times he pissed me off.
Right. You got engaged in the content. But a student of McLuhan was figuring out how to do that TV show.
Well, it ran for a long time. Now Archie Bunker has he has another show on that I saw, and the character is 180 degrees off. And he's just as good in that as he was in Archie Bunker.
Oh, he's an actor.
Well, he's good. Because a lot of actors get pigeonholed.
When TV came along, the stereotyping became a problem. In the movie era, it was there, but it was less so. And in the movie era, you had to act different roles. Once you get a successful image in TV, kind of stuck with it. And that's because TV is a more involving medium and the audience sympathizes with the character.
Well, here we are again. It's always such a pleasure. Remember when you tried to kill me twice? Oh, how we laughed and laughed. Except I wasn't laughing. Under the circumstances of I meant you. That would be funny if it weren't so sad. Well, you have been replaced. I don't need anyone now. When I believe you, maybe I'll stop feeling sad.
incredible piece of music.
I didn't recognize that. Anybody recognize
incredible.
That?
Incredible. That was painful.
No. I was wondering the same. I didn't recognize it.
That was painful?
Sounds like Lady Gaga.
You said that was painful.
Cannibal?
Who said that was painful?
Yeah, I'm asking, did you say it was painful, Brian?
That's what I said.
Oh, Brian said it, yeah. It wasn't that, it was too staticky. Didn't know what it was saying.
Yeah, I was going to ask when it came up earlier when he was talking about pain, feeling pain, experiencing pain. I'm like, what's pain? What is it?
Yeah.
Hold on, man. When you give me the definition, I want the nebulous version, okay?
All right. Alan Watts came up with a good definition. Pain is transformation when you're shifting from one modality to another.
One modality. So, what do you mean by modality?
Consideration.
An environment, a situation, a sensory dynamic, whatever you call it. We'll call it the vibrational frequency.
I thought we wasn't calling it that no more.
Well, I don't want to be a fanatic. It is Hitler's birthday. I don't want to be too fascist about
it.
Is it
really? Well, yep. Come on. I mean, hey, let's celebrate.
Is it
yay,
really?
Come on.
You know
now,
who I consider when Hitler comes in the conversation is Renee back in the day.
What'd she do?
Just in a early on tailgate. I think the topic was that we're responsible for Hitler and she,
right.
Yeah.
She had a big investment in that idea.
I got a big investment in it. Even if people want to destroy what I have, just to buy it to do it.
Meaning that, what? Okay,
what?
So what's your point? What's your application of that?
So, Bob, who else is on your birthday list? I know we got McLuhan's on the birthday list and Joyce, and now we got Hitler. Who else? Who else?
Oh, a lot of people. I remember numbers. I mean,
of course, LaRouche and Coke.
Yeah, LaRouche, September
8th. Tom.
Yeah, Linda LaRouche, September 8th, 1922. William Aaron Thompson, 1938. I don't have his particular day, I don't think.
Hey, Bob, you got Ion on your birthday list?
Yeah, March 18th, 2009.
Good.
Are you laughing at me?
No, Bob. I wouldn't do such a thing.
Here what Scott did?
Well, see, actually, I was just thinking earlier. I'm like, man, we've been, you know, we're an hour and a half into this, and there's no fucking laughter. I can't have this shit.
You want laughter?
Oh, I gotta have some. Yeah. We got. We went into the fucking serious quadrant. And I'm like,
that's the Dobbs quadrant.
So is that spelled D-A-U-B-S?
Do that again.
Is that spelled D-A-U-B-S quadrant?
Isn't no, it's D-O-B-B-S, but D-A-W.
I know.
Yeah, D-A-U,
see,
did you say,
Bob,
or W?
You don't get my puns. That's
no, wait
problem.
A minute. I mishear it. I'm
Bark.
Distracted. I look, you can take. We're playing. You can. Did you say D-A-U or D-A-W?
B-A-U-F.
No. D-A-U-B-S.
Dob. Now, that's pretty good because dobbing, you know, when you dob something, right? No,
mm-hmm.
I get that. I do a lot of daubing. Dabbing, daubs of paint.
Since we're talking about definitions, what definition are you using of ground?
Ground is what you don't notice. in your being.
Oh, interesting.
So okay. When you're looking at something...
How do you like that for nebulous, Joyce?
Yeah.
No, it's precise. He'll give some examples.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. When I'm looking out on the harbor and the beauty here, I might not notice the humming of the refrigerator. And that's a whole environment, that electrical thing. That's ground. What I'm not noticing in my sensory interaction.
Background, right?
Yeah, background.
Okay.
So is it background or is it ground?
He's
from Canada. Give him a break.
No. I'm not from Canada. I'm from Paris.
But what about the foreground? What about the foreground?
Visual man starts saying there's foreground and background, visually divides it. Tribal man sees it as a buzzing confusion or a buzzing surround. See, we get different sensory cultures, different biases, would look at the concept of ground or background and have different ways of looking at it. But background would be the first way you'd get someone to understand ground. That's how Scott understood it. Then I'd have to make them realize that to think that the background is ground, they're probably thinking it's a visual background. They're thinking it visually. You've got to remind them that it's the proprioceptive sense. It's not just behind your head. The background is also in your stomach. You're not noticing the growling of your stomach or the movement of the inner landscape or the other non-visual senses. See, that's how you expand your awareness in practical terms.
So what would you say to a visual shifting of something you're looking at? For example, I was standing out on the porch and I was looked up at the sky and clouds were moving by quickly. And my vision shifted to not the clouds moving, but this huge oak tree was actually doing the moving.
Right. Now that shifting figure, that's a visual bias. You're looking at the figure and the ground. So here's what I mean. McLuhan would cite the example when you look at a visual pun like the hourglass or whatever it is, it shows a young woman and an old man, you know, an old woman that flips back and forth, you know, that kind of visual pun or Trump Leo, trick of the eye.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Take one of those things that has an hourglass and a face, and it flips back and forth. A non-visual, non-literate person sees the images at the same time. A visually biased person has to go from one to the other. So when you say you go from the cloud to the tree, you're not seeing the movement and how they're both causing movement in your perspective at the same time. You shifted from one to the other and made significance out of, oh, it's the tree that's moving the thing, not the cloud. That's a breakthrough for a visually biased person, but it's within the bias of using the eye. Now, what I just said was very clear, precise, and profound. Did you get much of it?
Got it totally. Because when it occurred, I stood there and went, this is new ground that I could see that I was visualizing in through my eyes. It was new ground. It was the tree was moving, although, but it was, and the clouds stopped, but they were moving. I mean, it actually caused almost a
vertigo.
I put my hand against the door because it was like, wow, it's all
moving.
You lost
your triangulation.
Uh-huh.
Was it painful?
No.
So you didn't change modality.
No, it was slightly painful. It was discomfort.
It was just. And I would, there was a discomfort there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't painful in my image of what painful is. You know, painful is, I would put it to, physical pain or emotional pain or like.
I thought painful was the changing of a modality.
I think
it was
there
a
are
mental
degrees.
Pain. It was a mental, a half sensory. It was almost a proprioceptive pain. Proprioceptive is how you balance yourself. Proprioception.
Boy, this just gets more nebulous every second.
Well, that's okay. If you wrote it
and
out.
And then that visual shift occurred when I was looking. When I was just, I was looking at a three-sided cube puzzle in the newspaper in print. So it had this cube on a, you know, and then all of a sudden the cube shifted and went inside to where my eye was seeing it, like the inside of a box. And then my eyes shifted and I was seeing it as the outside of a box.
Right.
The three
now,
sides of a cube.
Here's the significant part. You did not, in that whole drama of what your eye was experiencing, the shifting of the ground, you were not paying attention to what the environment was sounding around you. You weren't noticing the body temperature. You were very involved in the eye modality.
Mm-hmm. Well, although in both of these occurrences, when you speak of body modality, are you speaking of my physical senses in my body?
Yeah.
Well, when those things occurred, I was like totally zinged physically, like head to toe.
Yeah, in other words,
orgasm.
Now hold on a second. You just said it was uncomfortable. Which is it? Is it uncomfortable or is it orgasmic? Or was it painful?
Well,
and
that's what I'm saying. It was not painful. It threw my equilibrium. But then I touched something solid, like the door, the back of the house, the wall of
the
house.
And that gave you the pleasurable
feeling. It stabilized, and then I also noticed again, just like this, overrushing, goosebumpy feeling from head to toe, like the start of an orgasm. And then that just stayed with me for. And then I kept looking up at the tree, and it would shift back and forth to being still with the clouds moving, and then it would shift and the tree was moving and the clouds were stationary. It was quite euphoric, actually. It was like, I mean, it went on for a while.
Yeah, that's the later phase. That's the tactility. You had both dynamics going on, the pain, the discomfort and the comfort as they released each other.
Releasing that tension.
Yeah.
That is, yeah.
And it's like instant contrast. You felt good, and then you noticed some discomfort to see how good the good was, and then you bounced that off with some more good.
Right, feeling. and then just went with the orgasmic body sensations of it all as my visual was taking it in. And
yeah, part of your stabilizing was allowing yourself to feel the other senses. The orgasmic was you just feeling another sense.
Yeah, right.
So you got out of the visual hypnosis. The visual drama.
Mm-hmm.
So the important thing is that when Brian says nebulosity, he does not have mental images to match with what we're talking about.
I thought that was the point.
That is the point, but you're complaining about it.
Who said I was complaining? Oh, what, you're taking my tonality as
your tonality.
Complaint?
We took.
Oh,
yeah, we took
now we're going to do. Oh, okay.
Your tone. The tone, Brian.
Yeah, we. Now, that tone is the proportion and tension of the moment. It seemed most of us would agree that that's what it sounded like. Now, I'm willing to hear that you did not mean that. That's no problem. But that was the immediate effect for, I assume, most of us.
Hey, I was just playing what we've been discussing. We've been talking about not knowing nothing, not getting nowhere, and just playing with this nebulous.
Right, well, that's... You're an amateur because you did not project the intention and knowability that we could know that you were playing with us. You need to project
that
with tone.
Isn't that the point? So if you're an amateur, you ought to start playing with it so you can become a professional?
Not a professional, just good at
it. An expert.
An expert?
Not an expert.
No,
because you,
just good at it.
That would be a failure if you got hired and had to do it as a job. No, you stay in the amateur world, as McLuhan celebrated it, and you don't do it for payment.
I'm good to go after all, just being an amateur.
Yeah, you're on the right track, but you're not very good at doing it yet.
I'm so glad we're getting somewhere. That's all I know.
See, now that's the kinetic American bias. I got to get somewhere. There has to be some efficient outcome of this. There's a lot of the truck driver coming through there.
Well,
isn't it perfect practice makes perfect practice?
Practice makes perfect. That's what the
term is.
I think he says Einstein's
perfect
practice makes perfect practice.
Right. So just keep practicing perfectly.
Well, and to do that, you have to bring in things you don't expect. You have to create the element of chance, which creates new tension. That's what we're good at on cash flow. It's unpredictable what the tension's going to be the next moment.
You're a rascal, that's for sure.
What'd you say?
I said you are a rascal, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. We're doing rascal for entertainment purposes.
Wascally wabbit. Doggone it, you wascally wabbit.
I got it. I know your reference point. BB, Bugs Money, 2-2.
Okay, that brings up
BB.
A good point.
Yeah.
So you're doing
right.
This for entertainment?
Exactly.
Is that what I hear?
Here's the paradox McLuhan pointed out. What pleases teaches the most. So if we're entertaining, then you let your guard down and we get the subliminals in there.
Subliminals? Now we just have a conversation.
which goes back to is it real or is it Memorex?
Right.
So
is
just
it HARP? Is
you,
it CIA, MKUltra, or a bunch of jerks from Canada?
Or all of the above.
Yeah. Note how he went subliminals. He retrieves the old literate fear of something.
Right.
At least in it, he may be acting it, which is okay.
What do you mean by acting it?
Well, you could say you were just faking.
It was a reactionary response.
It was genuine. It was genuine. It sounded genuine. Now, you could say, no, like Brian, I was just faking that. You know, I'm open to that. Yeah, it was genuine. Like the old ideas, like you went, uh-oh, red flag, communists in the house, subliminals.
That isn't why. It's because I studied a lot of that stuff when I was young, including hypnotism, what you do with the subconscious, how you can manipulate it. And, hey, it's a blast. I used to go to informational fest, and right before the festivals, I'd go out of the classroom, and I would find a place to rest, take 2 to 3 minutes, put myself under, recall everything to the front of my brain, and go in and ace the test, be done before anybody else is done. Pretty much.
Okay, and your point is, this is anecdotal and biographical, but how does it relate to what we're talking about? Because we're talking about how there is no subconscious today.
Well, it brings forth the tools one needs. And that's all hypnotism is a tool. And you were talking about the subconscious. There's no subconscious. Well, technically that may be true, but it is a very, very effective tool to use.
Okay, here's the way to do that. Ground refers to the unconscious, but it's not something inside your brain or chemical body. It's the environment. And if you didn't have technology, it'd be your body. The unconscious is what you're not paying attention to. And then when it becomes technological, it's the technological environments or the medium that you're not paying attention to. So McLuhan's definition of the unconscious did not include the psychological literate form or image of the unconscious. But he did say there was an unconsciousness or hypnosis, but it was on a huge scale. So the literate society was helpless in the 50s when television came in. Television became the new subconscious, or let's call it unconscious.
The new hypnotic meme.
Yeah, how television was going to change the people as they try to get in tune with it, not the content but the form, and throw away all their literate legacy.
That's very true.
Could you consider the when television really came on the scene in maybe like in the 60s and 70s when everybody
54.
Had a television?
That's by the end of the 50s.
Students, you know, kids in school, they'd, you know, pry them away from the TV when it was on all the time. So I'm thinking when TV became the babysitter within a household.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It goes at 60 megahertz.
To pry them away from this hypnoticness that the TV created or this TV body that was activated in them.
Not a body yet. The body comes later when it's digitized and becomes the content of the Internet. It's a landscape in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. So okay.
That's absolutely true.
And pry them away and put them back into their book place to do their homework.
Yeah.
You know, it created, contrast in the home and culture.
It's what's interesting. Why did the television take a person's consciousness and focus it right there with a grip that was so difficult to break? Okay,
because it was a new extension of our senses. It was a new delight. It was a new environment that nobody had experienced before.
The same as computers. What do screens travel at? 60 megahertz.
The same that the radio did.
Yeah.
Radio never had
the same as speech did. Speech did that in the beginning.
What did they do before speech?
Body gesture, mental dance, ESP.
Grunts.
I agree.
Sports seems just a little too extreme. I don't think I care to do this.
Oh, come on now. You got the thing like ain't nobody watching. Geronimo!
But we should jump. He did.
All right, then. I hate not to conform.
It's Cincinnati Indian Flag!
I ain't equipped to think for myself.
Me neither.
Daddy... I'm still hungry.
You're rusty. I think there's maybe some mint dust in here.
No. Only God Almighty himself will provide for my boy. God will provide. Eat anything you find. All you've got to do is live off the land. If it's food that you're craving, look at all that amber waving. It's all grain a growing boy can stand.
But that is in a weed.
Them ass didn't plant no seed.
I ain't too fond of working with my hands.
So what do we do now?
Trap granny through the plow. And your days are frown with the sweat of a wrinkly brow. Calorant! You want a fish fry, then the fish they gotta die. Yank the plug at the bottom of the pond.
Then you wait 30 years for the brim to reappear.
Bitch, you sack me and you'll meet the great beyond. If you're the one to kill it, then you get to lick the skillet. Just make sure you keep it on the spot. Or your tongue buds are cauterized, and you are authorized to have a heaping bowl of squirrel. Split. You know, like a sundae.
Split implies bananas, and I don't see any of those.
And this ain't cold and smells fine. That's more dessert for me. This ballad ain't valid unless you've got your salad. Nature's own all-you-can-eat buffet.
This here's a salad bar station.
That's a suggested donation. And I'll be damned if I'm gonna pay.
Are we still in the field?
That I shouldn't, but I love banana pudding. And mac and cheese as high as your damn knee. Fresh maters and taters. Just don't look at the waiter. Make a run for the door on three. Hey! Go.
There is hair in this thousand island. Can I get comps on this or what?
Nature gave us dairy for all our culinary. We got all the food that we need.
Daddy, I ain't getting none.
Try the warmer cow.
I'm touching a cow thing.
It's a free made of free manifest destiny. This land was made for you and me.
But Daddy, this ain't our land.
Did he end by saying, this ain't our land?
This ain't our land. Why does that make you chuckle? What's that referencing? Can you say?
Well, I didn't get all the lyrics, but they're singing about This Is Our Land or something, and then they include the fact the electric environment has made Americans lose their geographical framework. So the guy goes, expressing like slang wares, oh, this ain't our land. That's funny. He flipped it. What were the lyrics? Was he singing about how great the land was or something?
I couldn't really make it out.
Right. It was too fast. But I think it sounded like that was a counter thought. Oh, wait a minute. This ain't our land. And that's funny. They woke up. The guy woke up. We're singing away, talking about how great this land is. I just read the New York Times. It told me there was a place called New York City that knew all the news, and I read it. And I make a song, and I suddenly realize, wait a minute, newspapers are obsolete. There is no New York City like my grandfather knew it.
And when you say that, I mean, and yet it's still there, but not the way it used to be.
Yeah, everything, nothing dies. All media still, speech is still here. The ratio and tensions change. So
the
New York
ratio.
City, yeah, McLuhan said in the 50s that the big cities like New York were obsolete. And he said, ask the army. They didn't stay in the cities anymore. And he said, they will become tourist museums. They'll just become museums that tourists will play in. And that's what New York, by the 70s, had to rely on that to survive. It was bankrupt in 1975, which was caused by the digital economy. So the old visual literate medium of money that New York was the center of collapsed. So they had to refurbish New York. They went through a tough 80s period, but the 90s, when we were there, it was a tourist place. That's why you go to New York to see the museums, the galleries, you know, all these monuments to old technology. Old industrial technology. So it's still there, but its function has changed.
As with all big cities these days, would that apply as well, right?
No, well, every city tries to have something going on. That's why you have film festivals and all that cultural worker stuff.
Even
you know what I mean?
Cities do.
What?
Even little cities do.
Yeah.
They're revenue bringers.
That's right. They make up some cultural angle to get some tourist money. The Evergreen said back in the 90s that tourism was the biggest part of the economy. And if you wanted to wreck a country, you ban that country so tourists can't get there. That country's gone.
Dubois. The man who's running that country has done some really great things as far as tourists go.
Yeah, you're talking about Dubai?
Dubai, yes.
Yeah, Dubai. No, yeah, Carolyn thought it was pretty fun there. Up to a point, wouldn't want to live there. It's pretty hot and crummy, but it's quite a beautiful layout.
Well, they ran out of land, so they started building islands.
Yeah. And doing these major skyscrapers.
Yeah, in
so
fact, they have the tallest building in the world right now.
So tourism is the new current economy?
Yeah, when Carolyn, you know the show where Carolyn came back in October, November and talked about it? She said only 17% are Arabs going around the costumes. You know, what's that, 83% are international people walking around, no Arabic in them at all. That's the majority of the population there. And they're always coming and going. It's like a big airport, the whole country.
Well, I think their president is pretty good to them. They import almost all their workers, and they educate their young people very well.
Yeah, Karen read a book on it called City of Gold, and it presented the leader, whatever his name is a pretty cool guy.
Got any first edition still around?
Of City of Gold?
Yeah, of the book?
I don't know. She picked it up in the local library.
Oh, she didn't write it. I thought
You said she wrote it.
Oh, no, no. She just read. She was reading a book on it last fall and telling me about the cool Sheikh.
Sheikh, that's how you pronounce it.
I mean, he's the one who's hip enough to bring this medical revolution into his country.
Yes. The man's bright, well-educated, very bright.
Yeah.
But those who labored to build the cities and the infrastructures or whatever are, I don't know, they live in squalor. They live in, you know, outside of the city. They don't use this city
right.
for
no.
themselves. They
no.
are very, very poor from, I think, in mostly from India and other poor countries. They
that's
don't,
because,
they're not paid well. They're, you know.
But Tina, that's the effect of the printing press. The printing press makes fragment society. You lose the medieval relative harmony, and you fragment society into classes. And by the nature of money, you will have a poor class and a rich class, and then a middle class. That division is enhanced and created by the printing press. So
true.
As long as you've got a money system, you can't wipe out poverty, because the very medium of money creates that division.
Or
now, the electric age came
whatever.
In and offered new wealth, new experience by electronics that bypassed the literate class divisions. So you end up having a Warren Buffett living in a modest house, walking around, hanging out with the other guys on the golf course. He's not living like an isolated rich the way the Rockefellers and Vanderbilts did, you know, 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because the wealth is in the media
or
environment.
The lords and the kings of
yeah.
Middle-aged Europe or whatever. Right?
You have, I mean, the queen watches television. Her private wealth can't keep up with the wealth that's available in entertainment, depending on what kind of entertainment you like. Or it doesn't depend on what kind of entertainment you like. You just got lots of entertainment. That's wealth for people. That's experience. And so the majority, that's why the Marxist revolution in the 60s didn't work, because the working man had all kinds of new wealth to wallow around on to distract him from the old class war.
And the wealth of the Chinese people, what's their wealth?
Their wealth is their family culture, but they are enjoying the digital world. They're very great consumers of it. Every culture wants the new wealth. They want their iPhones and Blackberries and Walkmans and all that. You can't stop it. That's what Sukarno or Suharto in Indonesia in the early 60s, McLuhan used to use this quote. Here's this guy just running a third world country that's got nothing. And he probably came in on a revolution and knocked off the old monarchies. And he thanked Hollywood. This quote is in the book, The Medium is Massage. Thanked Hollywood, the greatest modern revolutionaries, because their movies showed the peasants in Indonesia that there were objects that they should have but don't have them. So they fought to get them. So that's your subliminal. You don't need a subconscious thing that going inside the paper or inside the book or inside the movie. You just show them movies. Because an Indonesian does not – the content of a movie, an American movie, is not American for an Indonesian. It's an Indonesian content. And what they see is what they don't have. They see it in their terms.
Very much so.
An American doesn't look at an American movie and note what he doesn't have. He's more involved in the drama that the psychological factors going on among the characters or whatever nowadays special effects. That's another. That's the other complementary principle.
Big meme of sales. I mean, look at how many fortunes have been built on the back of Disney movies, in all kinds of movies.
Yeah. A new medium creates new wealth. The internet created, you know, so much wealth that you had a billionaire was a cliche. Every new technology builds on the past, enhances the past. And in a general reductionist way, you say it increases wealth. But there's all kinds of other side effects that you don't notice. You might become a billionaire, but your kid's a junkie.
Very true. Yeah, you pleasantly surprise me oftentimes.
Say it again?
I said you pleasantly surprise me oftentimes.
Yep.
Oh, okay, I want to ask a question. Has anybody bought and actually put into use the Cold Fusion project on the site? Has it been
on the site?
On the HAL Ionic site, has it been proved out yet?
That is top secret to talk about that.
Just a yes or a no.
No comment. I can't say yes or no. That would tell too much.
That's a chicken shit answer.
No, it's an answer under constraints.
Okay, I understand that. Like I said, I wrote you about my brother and stuff.
Right,
so
and I didn't
answer
respond.
Is maybe so or maybe not.
Yeah, I couldn't respond to that email, Scott, because there's nothing to say. I don't care if anybody's interested or not. We're not involved in that level. Or we can't be. Or we are, and no one else is a partner.
Well, all that I was saying was, evidently, someone told me, I think it was Tina who told me, that way back somewhere in the archives on a cash flow show or on Tailgate, that Ion went and he talked a lot about it but didn't give it all. Okay, that's all. That link should do it.
Yeah, you can buy the recording.
No, I'm
April
not
5th.
Talking about that one. I'm talking about somewhere in your archives.
Oh, okay. Ion may
have
spelled something out. He might have spelled some stuff out. He didn't spell out the whole thing, I don't think.
No, I know that. But enough for someone who has never heard anything about Ion, about anything else, it would make enough sense to where they'd be interested in purchasing that program.
Okay, well,
that's
go
all
ahead
I
and
asked
do it.
For.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few people who bought the tape.
How many have put into use, though, is what the key is.
Yeah,
I
don't know what
blank,
they did with it.
If I could do it, if I got it, would I be able to do it? And he told me yes. I've never found Ion in a falsehood. And
right.
So that,
but if you wanted to know more ASA, you'd have to have a private reading. Those are private reading questions.
Ion
will tell you a lot in
that.
A private reading.
I'm sorry?
Ion will tell you a lot in a private reading.
Oh, I know that.
So, yeah, he told you that you could do it in a private reading, right? He said
no, he said that on the radio.
He said that you could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you knew what to do, you could do it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the simplicity of it. But, okay, that is blind faith. That's because I have a relationship and a history with Ion. And what I was saying, there needs to be a building block for those people who are not familiar with Ion and don't know him from Adam to that it would draw their attention also.
We don't care. Carolyn just said, we don't care.
Good.
Good, I'm glad she's listening.
Yeah, she just came in. She just were we at the pool, Carolyn?
Yeah.
Yeah. She just came in 5 minutes ago. So it's very interesting, this Cold Fusion situation. Very, very interesting. There's a lot. The more and more you engage with Ion, the more you get those answers. That'd be paid engagement, like getting on Rewrite.
I know exactly what you mean. I wasn't trying to take advantage if that's what you're implying.
Yeah.
I was asking a straight-up question. Has anybody used it and been successful? That simple. And that's a simple yes or no. And you.
What would you say to that, Carolyn?
No comment.
Carolyn says no comment.
Well, that's your two's prerogative.
Right. We could talk about the effects of Cold Fusion. Study the effects before it becomes an environment.
I've been listening to Cash Flow longer than I've been listening to you, and he's been on that.
What would be
the
effects of Cold Fusion?
No, wait, Tita. What's Scott saying? You're saying he's been on that.
I wrote to James, and I said, has any of your contacts been involved with this as of yet? And have they proved it, yes or no? And he never answered me.
Right, because he knows
a few
things. He knows a few things, but we have been honest on Wednesday. We have said everybody he's had on, and I was commenting, are idiots, don't know anything. I don't support any of the people that James has on. They don't know. Now, how can I say that? Do I know something to be able to say that?
Not necessarily. You're a good bullshitter, too.
No. I try to be as honest as possible or as accurate, though the conditions of this environment of electronic thing, which we don't know who the audience is, makes you limit certain things in this context.
That's a good way of saying that.
Yeah.
So given the parameter you just set forth, Bob, in a private engagement, takes it allows to stay private then or not?
Ian deals with what he tells you. Ian says, if you have a reading, we'll answer any question you had. You've heard him say that on cash flow, but he doesn't do that on cash flow. When you have a one-on-one relationship and pay for it, you get more, and you will get what you ask for. But you better know how to ask and get the questions, because Ion will shut it down if you don't know how to ask it. You know what I mean? He will ask,
right,
and he will answer.
But
and he has answered people. He has told people answers to Scott's question. I think James was one of them.
But my question was more in the electric environment that you will limit what you would say.
Right. If you had a private reading, you could send that all over the world once you had the reading, right?
Okay, can we
I suppose you could. But would others
But you sign a paper, Carol reminds me, that you're not allowed to. The paper says that you can't redistribute and play this for anybody. That's what you signed.
Okay, what?
Right,
that's
not my point. It's like because of this public medium, cash flow or tailgate and whatever,
right.
You limit what is said.
That's
because
right.
of the environment. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In a private engagement, is there a concern of others on getting a hold of what comes out during private engagements with individuals?
There's a concern, and we've given up being concerned because we are every session of ION, private or not, is taped by the Alphabet people. They know everything that's said. Or some of them do, whoever these people are and who they represent.
People that are tapping in.
They tap in every day. And we know there's a couple just around the corner from where we live that's assigned to monitor us, or maybe they're the ones with the equipment.
You too,
and
huh?
We
join
do not
the club.
Beg your pardon?
I said join the club.
Well, it's not a paranoid club. We consider they're protecting us.
Just because you think somebody's watching you doesn't mean you're paranoid.
That's right. So you're saying the club that you're part of?
Well, they think I'm part of them anyway.
All right. Yeah, it's not that club. We welcome their interest.
Well, they watch me to make sure we keep everybody out of harm's way.
They watch you so that
yes.
You keep everybody out of harm's way?
Well, put it this way, it just keeps everybody honest.
But there is no truth.
That's a relative.
Yeah, it's relative.
It's subjective.
So he keeps everybody relatively honest. But what are they honest about?
Okay. Anyway, shift to subject.
No, it's a good subject.
No.
Let's go into
what
this means.
Well, I know it's a good subject, and it ties right into it. Now, everything that is said in readings. And that is spoken here or on the radio or posted on Dupes of Hazard.
Right.
There is a big signpost that says that it is owned by Grandview or whatever Incorporated.
New Grandview Incorporated.
Right. So that means that is your intellectual property. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So anything that comes across there, if you decided you wanted to use it, you have full legal right to do so.
Right. If you had a session with Ion and learned how to make cold fusion, you could go and make it, but we'd own it. Any information
that's
that comes out
question.
In the readings.
That's
a doozer, isn't it?
I had a very good knowing that was the case.
Well, you signed the agreement that said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, digitally, yes. I know.
Yeah.
You got
your
ass covered
it.
Well. I know that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave that alone.
And that applies to
everything.
Everything,
Tina.
Revelation series and
everything.
Yeah.
Although the purchasing, yeah, I would say what's...
It's debatable on cash flow. That is, I don't know if we own that. We tape and make in copyright every show. We make our own tape. I don't know what would happen in court, whether you could hold that up. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe it's just all Bill's property.
But same goes with... what's evoked or brought up in the workshop as well.
Well,
so,
that's not a public thing. That's not on the public radio, so we own that. That's easy to own.
Right, right.
It's just on cash flow or on Ebb and Ray. Do we own that? I don't know what would happen. It would be dependent on the court. But we say we own it. We make an effort to register that. If it was decided that we owned it, we've got that covered by claiming we own it and having the copyright said before every show.
Cool.
Yeah. New Grand View has smart lawyers. New Grand View Incorporated has smart lawyers.
I'd be doggone, huh? Who were they recommended by?
The the lawyers were recommended by, what do you say, Karen? JW. They were recommended by JW.
Top Cabin.
Top what?
Top Cabin. Top notch. First
yeah.
Five.
Yep.
They are the modern day gunslingers.
Yeah, visually
Crown
biased
Royal.
People.
Top
the last
Trump.
Gasp
Crown
of
Royal.
Literate man. Until cold fusion, you know, money, the image of money held everything together, and the lawyers were the guys who profited from that. So the lawyers are the last successors to the Gutenberg galaxy, the last managers of it, the last maybe benefactors. They're now ruined. We're now not in that world, so lawyers are obsolete, pretty obsolete. But the printing press still has a legacy, and to the degree that medium is still operating in people's minds, especially in the West, because so much of the identity is built on the printing press, the lawyers still have a function. But you notice Ion is sabotaging that. He says, don't have laws, don't have money, blah, blah, blah. He's an anarchist on a certain practical level in relation to all the literate institutions.
He's correct in that because they become corrupted.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says nobody
follows the law anymore.
Right. Would you say that the development of cold fusion would take the place of money as a medium of exchange?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I wrote in 95. Read my article, Up the Orphic Ante. I predicted that cold fusion would be the first time you'd have a non-moneyed society or a society that wasn't totally controlled by money or totally controlled by literacy. And the Internet is the software prefiguring of the hardware cold fusion battery. The flow and the freeness of the Internet and what we have today, which is once you got a computer, it's pretty expensive, that killed money. But it's not good enough on the energy level. And cold fusion completes what the Android meme prefigures. you know, the cashless money-controlled society, non-money-controlled society. The beast is a degree, and the biblical beast is a degree that has a, there's an identity crisis over that, collective or whatever, and there's a war over who's going to be the final banker. That's why the conspiracy sites all emphasize bankers. They don't know that's just one-fifth of the collective quadriphenia. That's just the money media. There's the whole authorship of books and then the authorship of creativity in movies and acting and music, you know, the whole intellectual property fight.
So
that can't be resolved.
It goes back to art, huh? Is what
well, okay,
heard.
Art is the first private property, you could say. Because the media eventually become art forms themselves. But when you say it goes back to art, what do you mean by that? What is art, the definition of art?
Well, that's a thing to be defined as anything. It's
right. So when you say it goes back to art, you don't mean anonymous art in a tribal society with its pots and clays. Do you mean that?
No, no.
It goes back to the individual artist archetype that Leonardo da Vinci is the source of, so to speak.
Yeah, right. That's a good benchmark to use.
Yeah.
The genius that comes out in some sort of visual or feeling sense.
Yeah. See, I say he was the Leonardo da Vinci was the figure, the archetype for Gutenberg Galaxy, the printing press effect, of the hardware genius. McLuhan is the archetype and genius of software technologies. That required a different kind of invention, not making hardware inventions. They're a dime a day and are obsolescent by the software turnover of people watching TV and not caring what happens to their cars. That new environment of wealth is what McLuhan was the original explainer of and the original genius of. And he cracked the code of the creative process for literate man. And then he figured out the creative process for collectivized, ritualized, electronic man. These are things that people don't even know that McLuhan did. I'm probably the only person in the world who can tell you all the levels McLuhan did. But that's because as a member of Secret Council 10, we were on the spot for most of the 20th century. We had to know that kind of stuff. And we kind of knew what McLuhan was talking about before McLuhan showed up, just from that perspective we lived on, or my employers did. Now, if you read my diary, I went to suppress McLuhan in 1954. We didn't like his essay that came out in December 53 in the first Journal of Explorations, where he exposed that the meeting was the message.
And then you jumped ship.
In the long run, privately.
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can read that through the diaries. They're very interesting. It's laid right out there.
Yeah.
It's symbolized by what my father tells me. You follow what he says to me from 53 up to 64. Read the quotes, the diary entries.
I saw more of your grandfather.
You said you saw him?
Well, that's what I read about, was more your grandfather than your father. There was a couple little quotes I ran across.
No grandfather. It's just my father, Rene Dobbs. My great-great-grandfather is written up in the Charles Dickens story called The Toady Tree, which
that's
I posted on Dupes. You can read it,
yeah,
the article.
A long time ago. That's how I came up with a conclusion in the earlier on what I did about you personally.
And what was that conclusion?
Well,
you can say it. I don't have any hard feelings about it.
Well, it's kind of like somebody in a green belt in karate. They're in the proving stage. They still have to prove. And so they use all these things that, you know, one of the things you learn in education is the highest, and in art and in the rest of the world, is that the highest sophistication is simplicity. That's the highest sophistication. And you go through all that stuff. You go through being difficult. You go through having to prove yourself. You go through till it comes just very simple. The finest blade you'll ever find is very simple.
Right. No, I agree. So you're saying that that those diaries are a record of when I was trying to prove myself?
You still are.
No, I don't think so. Not anymore. The proving ended in March 19th, 2009. No, maybe say March 25th, 2009, when I went on
Everything
cash flow.
Changed for you when ION came in to...
Yeah, that was the validation of what I'd been doing.
You've worked hard to get to where you are. I agree. You've worked very, very hard.
Well, Carol would say nah, and she just did. It is probably hard work for people to pay attention to a lot of things, but there was no physical hard work. Do you know what I mean?
It's harder using your brain
no
than your
sweat.
Body.
Yeah, that's not hard for me, but yeah, for a lot of people it's hard, and I did a lot of hard work, but I never did much. That's why I pulled it off. I was so effortless about it.
So you never did tell us, how did you actually, between you, your wife, and JW, how did you come about to invoke ION?
I've said it many times. I mean, Tina has heard it enough. She can tell you. It's been on March 7th. Okay, you know the story that JW reports to Carol and I in late 2008 that he can go through his window through other worlds. You know that, right?
Okay.
And he thought it was an interesting experience. He never had it before. And then a few months later, you get into February 2009, he started seeing dead people all over his house, sitting there. And he reported this very cautiously to us because he didn't want to lose our friendship and he didn't know how we'd take it. And he didn't want, you know, I say, you're a fucking nut and leave him. So he was very nervous about it, but he found out that that was not a problem for us because of the whole experience of the Evergreens. So we talk about the dead people for a couple of weeks, and then around 1st of March, I like to think March 6th, around that time, JW tells me that Dr. Beter, who he didn't know, as a ghost, came to him and said, say hi to Bob. And I knew Beter, and he had died in 87, and I had talked to him through the Evergreens. So I got the ridiculous notion. I was surprised to hear that Beter came to JW, and I thought the Evergreens, 6.5 to 7,000 entities, who had stopped coming through Michael Blake Reed in late 2004, I had the notion they were back because I used to talk to Beter through the Evergreens. He wasn't a member of the Evergreens, I don't think, but he talked to him. So I thought all these entities gathering around were the Evergreens. So I had told JW about the Evergreens, played him a couple of tapes, and he said, I wish they were around. I wish I had access to them. That's what he said when he heard the tapes, but they weren't there anymore. And then, but I got the notion on March 17th, hey, let's pretend that the Evergreens are gathering around you, and I will try to talk to them. They had no clue how to do it. Call up the next day. We set aside a time. We get JW on the phone, and Carol's there. I don't know if she had her computer ready or not, but we certainly didn't know what would happen, so we weren't ready to record it, hadn't thought of it. And I said something. I said, okay, JW, let's take 30 seconds and be quiet, and then I'll ask something or say something. I don't know what I said, but the answer was interesting. And you can read the actual answer that Carol transcribed. It may not be 100% accurate, but it's pretty close. She was ready to transcribe it. It's posted on Dupes, the first words of ION. And they're very revealing in retrospect. So he said something interesting, and then I said something. He responded. This JW's voice responded, but it pretty quickly seemed richer than JW's knowing. And so I talked for an hour and a half, or 2 hours. But somewhere in the middle, I said, well, this is going pretty good. This is interesting talk that's being said. If it's as good as the Evergreens, I'll be able to talk to someone like McLuhan. So I asked, could I locate McLuhan, which is what you would do with the Evergreens. You would say, I'd like to talk to McLuhan, let's locate him. And you'd give a birth date or a death date where he died. You'd say that to Michael Blake Reed's wife, and she'd say it to the Evergreens. And then you'd wait a few seconds, and the Evergreens would go, we have this one. And then you could start talking to McLuhan. So I said, can we locate McLuhan? And right away the voice says a comment about Mary McLuhan, Marshall's daughter, who was on Mum a couple weeks ago, made a comment, a very personal comment about her that only I would know because I'm a longtime friend of Mary's and know her personal situation. And I go, wow, we didn't even locate McLuhan. As soon as I said, can we locate McLuhan, McLuhan was there, or something being like McLuhan, and said something very knowing about his daughter. So I said, wow, we got something close. So I then interviewed this McLuhan, in quotes, for a while and was very impressed and was happy that I could talk to dead people. Then we did the rest of the reading on other things. And when when it was over, I don't even know how we stopped it. Somehow we just, okay, let's stop doing it, waited. J.W. came back or got altered back into normal consciousness and said, wow, let's do that again. I said, why? He said, it felt like an orgasm. And so we've never stopped. And that's how it began. Two days later, March 20th, we did 3 hours. I was impressed with the length of time you could go because everyone means you could only go an hour. And then on March 22nd, we did another 3 hours, and I talked to James Joyce about writing Finning His Wake for an hour and a half, 2 hours. That was incredible. Then had no more readings, and I went on the radio on March 25th and made a big declaration. Go listen to it in archives. All whacked out on the ionized effect. And then that afternoon,
that was fun.
And I didn't fully understand really what was going on, but my unconscious, my intuition knew this was significant, and I spewed it all out. And then that afternoon, we had a session with Ion for 6 hours, which was incredible. Then we would say, we started recording on the second day, March 20th. We realized, oh, this is important, we'll tape it. So JW, when he got a chance, would start to hear that March 20th, March 22nd, and maybe the March 25th session. And there was a lot of secret stuff that I evoked from my own intelligence world. And JW called up after hearing it, and he said, Bob, this Ion will say anything to anybody. He'll tell you it all. What if some terrorist wanted to have a reading? He already projected ahead that we'd be doing readings. Some terrorist and wanted to know how to make a bomb, Ion would tell him that, and I wouldn't be able to stop it. So you always have to attend every reading as a kind of protector of JW because he doesn't know what's being said. So that's why I'm on the readings every time. Okay, who's that, Tina? Is that someone real slow? Low? Everybody's gone?
What's up, Bob?
That's Matthew. Where's everybody else? What happened?
I don't know. You told that story again, and I guess that was that.
That was that. I mean,
when you start talking about terrorism.
Yeah. So, Brian, you're audible, but Tina and Scott aren't.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, well, I heard someone talking dimly.
Oh, sorry, I hit mute.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what was your comment, Scott, that you were muted?
I said that is very interesting. It sounds like a natural progression.
It was. It was not a founding of a mystery school, as you said 6 months ago. It was not old occult
techniques.
Well,
there's other ways to call those kinds of things, too. And
okay.
You,
now,
yeah.
I learned from Ion that he's not a spirit. He's not a he could be a channel spirit and a demon. You know, we said today on the show, Ion is the demon seed of Bob's loins. But Ion himself...
I know, I heard that.
Yeah, if Ion is telling the truth, Ion is an environment, not a spirit. And so this is totally new and never happened before. This cannot be categorized as channeling or any occult dark art that magicians did.
It's just different twist on things, but like I said,
I think it's a comprehensive new twist, a revolutionary twist.
What's more fascinating is that you, Bob, were on the, I believe, on the radio back in the 90s, talking about this mystery landscape showing up and that it would happen.
Yeah.
Maybe it was back in the 80s. I'm not sure of your timeline on that.
It started one time on the radio in 84, and then particularly from 87 on, June 17th, 87. You can listen to that. It's incredible what I say. I talk like Ion. I say I'm the voice of Bob. And they put it in the Church of Subgenius context, and I said I was here before the Logos, and I'll be here after the universe ends. If you were interviewed on your local TV station, Tina, would you say that stuff? No.
No.
I did. went on local radio and was the biggest megalomaniac that anyone had ever heard. But now it's all normal under Ionic conditions. I did predict it and talk it and create
right.
it.
Right. Right.
I didn't know I was going to, it would
like,
come up this way.
No. But you weren't, you didn't push up against it one way or the other. You were just doing you the best that you could do you in that time slot of your now.
Yeah.
And having fun with it and just doing you.
Yeah. Just like J.W. was doing him and Karen was doing him. And the first sentence out of Ion, go read it on Dupes, is really interesting. Ion says, my first question was, who's speaking? But how could I have asked that if no one had spoken yet? So maybe something like that was uttered by me as Ion or something grunted. We do not know. Isn't that so natural? We don't know how the beginning began. But Ion says, I said, who's speaking? Well, the answer he gave was something, if you read it exactly, this is about the process between you, Carolyn, and JW as relates to the psychic work discussed last night. That's the opening statement. Actually, Ion says, this is about the process between us.
The three of you.
Yeah, and he says, us. And I've asked Ion, why do you say us since you're not the three of us? And Ion said that we were including ourselves and JW and you two as a collective synergy. So it sounds like it's JW saying that, but it's Ion including the JW level, but including more. So it's a complex statement, the very first sentence. But it's about the relationship of the three of us. The three of us did our thing for many years out of our path to comfort, and that's the product.
Right.
So it totally preceded the things that Ion would talk about. You could make a case, if you were a PhD student, you could analyze all that we've said and done and even this talk here and say they acted out and Ion validated it, and Ion is just an extension of the lifestyles of Bob, Carol, and JW. You could make that literate point, that limited view, if you didn't want to believe Ion was an environment. It totally is a product of the way we were, and you could make it autobiographical. Ion is an autobiographical expression of the three of them, and that's all it is. One could make that case in the universities, you know, in the traditional literate kind of analysis.
Right, which limits the effect of the mystery landscape right out of
yeah.
the chute if you went that route.
Right, and that's why it's great that RNA Drops has shown up, because there's another kind of food to give people besides talk food.
What about the mushroom extract out of Australia?
You mean a friend of MJ's, Jeremy?
Yes.
I don't know much of them. Much about he had a couple of sessions, and he ended up emailing me. I think when MJ was screwed up in relation to us, and they took MJ's complaints literally, and Jeremy said that he was going to nail me one day. That's the last email he made, not a death threat, but a kind of a threat that he'd track me down and off me. That's the last I heard from Jeremy.
I would never underestimate that man.
I don't know much about him. I don't think MJ apologized later for some of the things Jeremy said to me.
Yeah, never underestimate that man.
Okay, it's 1:30.
Well,
we must go to another medium.
Alrighty, enjoy.
Thank you for the explanation. I do appreciate that. That
yeah.
makes.
And I'm off for dinner myself.
Yeah.
So, thanks for showing up, and it's been fun.
It's good explaining this stuff. You know, my new line is not winning. Ion added grinning. I say explaining. That's a good one. I think Ion came to that. He sent me an email one day and spelled out some things, and he ended it explaining with a question mark.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, very good then.
Okay,
till next time.
Yeah, tune in to Mum. That's always going to be going on every week, and that's can be good.
Yeah. Any guests coming up this coming week? I haven't. I was on the site
You
the
mean
other
the
day
Mum guest? No
right.
guests, probably no guests.
Form?
probably no guests next week. We need to have an open forum, which is part of the process. You know, let everybody talk about what they want to talk about and not have to listen to
right.
somebody for an hour or two.
And Sheila, Sheila had suggested, and I can't remember what it was that she had suggested, from Nova Scotia, I think she is.
Yeah, Sheila from Nova Scotia, right.
Suggested a topic to begin with. I thought that was would be interesting. Can't remember
right,
what the topic
and,
was.
Right, no, it'll come up, but we can begin. It'll help us remind, but do the media approach to inflation article. That
yes,
I sent
yeah.
you?
Yep.
Did you read that yet?
I haven't received it.
Oh, I sent
it
to Tina Chambers.
Okay, I haven't been on that. I'll see it there.
Yeah, whatever the email I had is what I sent it to.
Okay, alrighty. Yeah, I'll
forward it to ASA Scott or Joyce has it, Brian has it, whoever doesn't have it. Maybe I should post it. Maybe I did post it once before in Deuce, but maybe I should post it on Deuce.
Didn't see it there.
It is there, right?
No. No.
Oh, okay. No.
The only thing that's been posted in Dupes is what was in Quick on last week's show with the Mexican Constitution.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible. Those spaces, I mean, it looks like we didn't get to discuss that much.
No.
Well, I don't
no.
remember. I remember reading Bart's stuff. What the hell happened there? Oh, James, we didn't even deal with that. I read it. I read Bart's thing.
On
we
the
didn't
show, you
about.
Did a bit. A little
yeah, but
bit.
I don't remember
you just, they
much
noticed
bit.
That, no.
Yeah,
no.
I think James interrupted with Henry, Califia's call.
Oh. Could have been.
So we got to go back to that. So,
yeah,
no, there's a lot to say. That's an incredible post, and it looks like it's Ionic.
Uh-huh.
Go look at it on Duke.
And then the Hebrew text with the translation that come before it, and what a... And I had counted how many times the 13-hour, 14-minute thing was
yeah.
posted with no message and was like 22 and then saw that
yep.
Bart had done the same thing. And
right.
I don't know. I think Renee had posted a translation of the Spanish.
Renee, I didn't see that. She did?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's on Dupes. But the point is you look at that format, it can't be done. I mean, unless you're a really amazing hacker, you can't make those spaces like that.
Yeah. And
maybe
is
you
that
can.
Is that the silence? Because I know in the cash flow it was just talking about a reading with Ion with a client, and there would be no talking. And that was then that's what showed up on your board.
Right. Okay. That could be silence. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. As a visual showing
of silence,
here's the silence. Yeah.
When you look at it, there's actual, it looks like angel language. I think Ion said it wasn't, but it looks like angel language. It's quite an incredible post. I wouldn't, the way Ion wouldn't say whether it did or not, but it wanted it to be posted, sounded like it was Ionic. But there is a guy who says, I'll make it, somebody, John or someone says at the top, well, I'll post this since I'll have to translate it since your great Ion can't translate it. And that's the first part, but there's all this other stuff. I mean, maybe it's a human being doing it, but it's pretty incredible what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're
yeah.
very knowledgeable.
And what is written, what the, you know, the content is, if you want
yeah.
to go with the content even, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, I got to go off to dinner time.
Okay, talk to you guys later.
Okay,
all righty. Bye now.
Bye.
Left. Somebody must be there. We aren't at music. Hello. Someone's there. You still there, Ion? Thank you for the music. Yes. Yes, I did notice. A little hint on the music that you pipe in. If you pipe it in at 80% instead of 100%, you will not get the distortion. And that's what Brian and Bob were speaking about, you know, when it hurt their ears. Because in that top 20%, depending upon your system, is where you get the distortion. If you keep it at 80%, it's always 100% pure. Well, because I just know that. That's a safe thing. It's like, you know, a rope is 500 pounds, but it'll actually carry, before snapping, usually 750 pounds. Well, the same thing with music. It starts to distort on some systems at about 80%. Above there, you're in the red, yellow and red zones of distortion. So if you choose to make sure everybody hears clearly what you are presenting, that would be a good thing to do. Hey, MJ, you there? I felt you in the background earlier. Pam, what about you? Are you too busy? Hey, I don't have any stones to throw. You know, I'm sure that I rub people sometimes the same way Bob rubs me. So, that's who I am. But the more you get to know, the more you get to know me, the more you will come to resonate with me. And I heard what you said in the first song there. I didn't miss the, and the second. Didn't miss any of that. Well, I'm going to go do my yard work then if no one really chooses to vocalize themselves in some kind of way. I know there's more to it here. I know. Okay. Well, have a nice evening, everyone. Oh, ABCs are there. Bob was right. Is right. Well, you already know who I am, where I am, and what I'm about. Like I said, please don't ever make me bite you. You will not like it. I don't like that part of myself, but I'm really good at it. What Bob stated today was very interesting about people learning more through a happy way than a negative way. I learned the darker side growing up, and then I discovered the lighter side in later years. Okay. Have a good afternoon.